Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first podcast of the Digitally Uploaded Podcast for 2018. We all survived last year. Hooray. So with us this week, we have Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hello. It's lovely to be back. It's sunny outside in Melbourne, of course. When I say sunny, I mean it's pissing down with rain. Because why would it not be?
That's right. You had some hot days recently, so.
Yeah, this is my payment.
And we also have Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hey, the weather is really hot and disgusting over here. I really wish it was raining. But hi, Matt.
Hot weather is nice. Hot weather is the best.
No, that is false.
The weather outside is frightful, but inside it's also frightful.
Screw cold weather. All right, so we have a lot to talk about in the first podcast for the year because lots of stuff's happened, and obviously we have a whole new sparkling year to look forward to, lots of good games and all that nonsense. So we're going to start things off with a track from Rin, actually, not Miku, but Rin, another Vocaloid. Tokyo Teddy Bear, good track to start with, and then we'll get on with it. And welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that bit of music. So, given it's the first podcast of the year, and it's obviously a brand sparkling new year to look forward to, we thought the good place to start this week would be to look at the year ahead for 2018 and some of the things that we expect from it and all that kind of jazz. I think the obvious place to start would be the Nintendo Switch. I think after last year, Nintendo had a lot of momentum for their console, and I think that's going to continue into this year. I think it's probably going to be the most exciting console of the year, and I think that momentum that it built last year will just kind of roll on. We're going to talk about the Nintendo Direct, which happened late last week, in the next segment. But yeah, just generally speaking, I think it's going to be a good year for Nintendo, and I think it's going to be a great year for the Switch. I think we're going to be playing it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know about you guys, but I've not touched my Switch in a while. I know. Wow. Yeah. Or wow. I'm waiting on Bayonetta 1 and 2 to come out on it so I can just become some sort of insane person who doesn't leave his room and also can leave his room but chooses not to because Dock Mode is more fun. Yeah, so that's coming out. And then also the Yoshi game, which I'm convinced Nintendo is advertising directly towards me. And I don't like it because I can't afford all these things. Stop it. I don't like it. It's not fair. Yeah, it's going to be a good year for this console, I feel. And especially after Mario Odyssey as well, I'm just excited to have more, like, niche. I'm not going to say niche, but, like, more, like, for me games. Because mm-hmm. as much as I love Mario Odyssey, it is very much a game for everyone, and I want my stupid nonsense to be for me. I need it.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's kind of going in the Switch's favor is the fact that it's kind of, last year was really the last year for the PlayStation Vita in terms of dedicated support from developers, especially in Japan. The Vita was really sustained by having a lot of Japanese developers working on visual novels and JRPGs and all that kind of stuff. A lot of Japanese developers do like working on handhelds, so a natural move for them will be to jump over to the Switch. So on top of everything else that you get from the Switch, you're going to see a lot of that more niche Japanese stuff come out on the console, or at least start to be in development for the console, which is really cool. I'm looking forward to playing visual novels on the Switch. I think it'll be a good screen for it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, is Shin Megami Tensei meant to be coming out this year or next year?
I have no idea. I don't care about that series.
Okay, well,
cool, I guess that's fine.
Okay. I mean, that's lovely. Well, I'm going to enjoy it probably.
No, I
wow. And all of a sudden, this podcast loses all people listening to it. And pitchforks appear outside of Matt's house.
I'm much more a Persona guy, I must admit. So, yeah, Shin Megami Tensei, I know it's popular, and I'm sure the Switch one will be good and stuff. Actually, the video trailer that they showed last year certainly looked appealing, so I'm sure it'll be good. I just wish that Nintendo would hurry up and announce a port of Tokyo Mirage Sessions. That would be good. Nah. That's a Persona game in all but name. It's great.
All right.
It was the best Wii U game, so it needs a Switch port. Everything else.
It is not. Bayonetta 2 is the best Wii U game.
No.
All right. We're talking about the Wii U in 2018. I think we can probably move on, as everyone else in the world has.
Yeah. I mean, but what do people think about PlayStation's, obviously, the staple console for us, for a lot of us? Well, it has been for a few years now.
I think everyone in the world is just looking forward to Dragon Ball FighterZ. Like, yeah. I don't think there's a single person who isn't thinking, wow, that looks really good. And even, like, I think they got the NFL in America. Like, they got one of the football teams, I think the Packers or something, to do a ad for Dragon Ball FighterZ, and it's just them all playing and getting really hyped over it.
I could not want this game any less now.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Microsoft's pretty invested in that game. It seems to be the one Japanese game that the Xbox is going to get this year. So Microsoft
probably be the one game Xbox gets. Period.
Microsoft probably pulled some resources to get, you know, the dude bros to play the game. But yeah, going back to the PlayStation, it should be a good year for Sony, I think. The first party lineup for Sony doesn't appeal that much to me, with the exception, obviously, of Shadow of the Colossus. Oh, actually, Concrete Graffiti, whatever it's called.
What?
That one.
Concrete Jungle, great song.
Concrete Jungle, that's the one. No, the game that was announced, the one about, you know, putting graffiti in a, and you're running around in an urban environment. It's like a platformer thing.
Is it New York Concrete Jungle?
I can't remember.
Where dreams are made of.
Oh, shit. Now I'm going to have to research it.
Here on the Digitally Downloaded Podcast, we take things incredibly seriously.
Yeah, we all love Jersey and Beyonce, especially.
Concrete. What's it called? Concrete Genie. There you go.
Concrete Genie. Okay. Well, that's
yeah. That game looked really charming, and that's the kind of thing I like to see Sony invest in. But yeah, I'm not hugely interested in the first party stuff from Sony. I'm much more interested in the third party stuff.
Well, I mean, you've got a voice coming out this year, isn't it?
What's coming out?
I don't care much about that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really does.
But I'm looking forward to seeing the PlayStation VR and what we get from that this year as well. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about whether it's selling enough and all that kind of nonsense. It's crazily popular in Japan. It had a really good end of year in terms of sales out west. Black Friday, even in America, was a big day for it and sold a lot of units. So it's in a lot of households now. And I think this year we'll start to see the games emerge from being those kind of tech demos or limited experiences done with small budgets. And we'll probably start to see some bigger stuff and some more in-depth stuff and some more interesting stuff from VR this year, which should be good.
Absolutely.
Because that's something that Sony has that Nintendo doesn't. And having the two of them, having the Switch and the PlayStation 4 with VR side by side, will be a really, really good mix for 2018, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if you've played it yet or if it's on PSVR at all, but there's a new VR version of Payday 2.
Oh, no.
No, but it's actually really good.
Don't do this to me.
No, it's super cool looking.
Payday 2. Why? Yeah. You didn't need more of that. I didn't need to be more immersed in Payday 2.
I did.
And I want to be less immersed in, if possible, at all.
I know, but that's awesome. I'm very excited.
What's good about it?
Yeah, that's
you, now, you get to rob a bank.
You can now rob a bank and shoot someone in the face.
Yes. As if
you are really shooting someone in the face and robbing a bank.
Yes.
Woo! You can
I can be Ocean's 11, but instead of 11, it's just 1.
You can now traffic drugs.
I can just be Ocean.
Oh, God.
That's all I want. Yeah. I want to be a cool gun boy.
No, that doesn't work for me. I was thinking more. I was thinking more stuff like Moss, which I played last year. Moss is really good. That's really cute. That's the one with the mouse.
Oh,
The small, cute, adorable one where you guide him through the world.
Okay,
yeah.
See, that is a cute boy game. Okay, I'm happy with a cute boy. Not so keen on a gun boy. But if you are a gun boy and you're listening, I'm glad that you have this ability to carry off a drug heist in PSVR, and I support you, but from a distance. Please don't come near me.
Yeah. And on a different note, not to do with VR, I'm looking forward to Dead or Alive 6 being announced. That's going to be great. That's going to happen this year. I'm 100% sure of it.
Yes.
I did love last year how everybody was up in arms because Koei Tecmo announced that they weren't supporting Dead or Alive 5 anymore. With more DLC, and everybody interpreted that as, we're not doing Dead or Alive anymore. It's like, yeah, guys, Dead or Alive basically makes Koei billions of dollars every year. They're not going to stop developing it.
They're going to keep selling us those costumes, right? Like, we need it. We need them.
You idiots. But I think it'll be, I just can't wait to see what they come up with, because Dead or Alive 5 still looks good, but it was actually a PlayStation 3 game and just upscaled to PS4. So it's a bit long in the tooth now, especially for a series that kind of relies on its visuals.
That's a very good way of describing it, I guess.
And it's going to be really fascinating to see what they come up with for the new one. So, it's going to be a good year, I think, 2018. There are so many games that we could talk about. Obviously, we're not going to now. We're going to be talking about them through the year as they come up. But I think, just generally speaking, it'll be a good year for Switch. It'll be a good year for PS4 and PlayStation VR. It'll be a good year for Dead or Alive. And it'll be a really crappy year for Microsoft.
Well, we all forgot the true savior of the year, Metal Gear Survive.
Oh, come on.
Metal Gear Survive is going to be the world's best game.
No, it's Monster Hunter World. It's Monster Hunter World.
No, on that note...
Monster Hunter Survive.
Some music. We've got Shadow of the Colossus, a track from the Shadow of Colossus OST today, because that game's not too far away, the HD remaster. That's something to get really excited for. We've picked out The Opened Way as the track, so enjoy, and we will be back to talk about Nintendo Direct in a moment. Welcome back, everybody. Over the break, we've had another person drop into the podcast, Matt. Hello, Matt. Welcome and glad you could make it.
Hello.
Great. So, we're all doing good.
I mean, Metal Gear Survive's coming out this year, so I'm not great. I'm like a solid four.
We're going to mute Alan. So, yeah, it's the Nintendo Direct happened late last week, and it was, I guess, Nintendo's first bit of PR activity for the year, and it was 13 minutes of pretty awesome stuff. I think most people came away from that 13 minutes, or I think it was about 13 minutes, of endless gameplay footage, even more excited about the Switch than they were going in, and it's going to be a big year for it. So just to run through some of the quick highlights, obviously Dark Souls is coming to Nintendo Switch and other consoles, but everybody's most excited about having it on the go, I guess, and that's pretty cool. Dark Souls is all right. Then there's an all girl fighting game, which doesn't really matter because the only girl that counts is Athena.
What about Mai?
No,
Athena. Oh, does anyone care? Words.
It's all the SNK ladies in a brawler together, and yeah, the only one that counts out of that group is Athena. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe
throwing down the truth bombs. What else is coming? Kirby looked pretty good. I think everybody likes Kirby. You can't not like Kirby, so that was a good thing. What else happened? Oh, a Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, so Switch is becoming the port console, and I'm super okay with that. And when I wanted the Switch, I was like, wow, I can't wait to play a game like Dark Souls on the go. And then it happened, and that's incredible. So, like,
well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like the Switch is a powerful enough console to do basically what the other consoles do, but it's portable, and everybody wants their games portable. So, why not put them on the Switch, which is a good reason to rebuy them? So, it's good for the developer. It's good for us because we can play Dark Souls on the morning commute and whatever. Mm. And yeah, it's basically good for everybody. It's good for Nintendo. They get lots of money. But yeah, Hyrule Warriors, that's a big, exciting one. As somebody who's packed away his Wii U, who loved Hyrule Warriors, I've only really got the 3DS one to play, and it's not very good. So having a Switch one version will be great. It will sit nicely next to Fire Emblem Warriors, and I'll be a very happy person indeed. What else happened in this...
The world ends with you.
Ah, of course. There we go. That's the one, Alan. Thank you for reminding me. The world ends with you.
I'm sorry, Ginny. It was the ultimate sandbagging right there.
We'll talk about Donkey Kong freezing Dong later on. It's all good.
Yeah, but The World Ends With You is a game that people have wanted for a long time or have loved for a long time. They wanted a sequel. They didn't get a sequel, but they did get a port of the original. And hopefully, you know, that shows enough interest that there might just be a future in that franchise yet, which would make lots of people very happy. And now I'll let Ginny talk about Donkey Kong because I really don't care.
I'm actually the worst person because I didn't play the original Donkey Kong Freezing Dong Kong.
You dodged the bullet there, Ginny.
I didn't play the original Donkey Kong Tropical Dong, so I'm like the last person qualified to talk about this. But there's a surfboard, and you surf.
Okay. This is the worst. This podcast is going to be stopped now. It's over. We're done. They're calling it there.
You get sunglasses, so it's got to be dope, right?
You need to be a cool bro with your cool bro dudes.
Yeah.
It's got a surfboard. That's a bit like, you know, Link's got a motorbike, so now Breath of the Wild's cool.
I'm going to quickly divert attention to the fact that someone has modded Breath of the Wild to make Link's motorcycle into Sonic. And
yeah, I love that.
That's what we're going to come back to that at some point. But Donkey Kong
Tropical Freeze with its special funky mode where you're basically too cool to take damage and die. I love that.
Well, awesome. It's an easy nerd mode.
To be fair, the game was actually bloody difficult. So
it was really hard.
I'm totally for this mode. I think it's great. And the way that they've framed it is hilarious as well.
Yeah, it's good. So
it's a really good game, though. Like, retro makes good games.
It's decent enough. I mean, I think we all would have preferred an actual new Donkey Kong game, and these are 2D platformers. So
I would have preferred them to make F-Zero, but this is fine.
I guess it keeps the people at Retro in a job while they work on something a little bit more substantial, porting it to the
Absolutely.
Switch. So yeah, good on them.
It'll be fine. It'll be a very serviceable game, and that's pretty much all I want from it.
Oh, one game from the direct I don't think anybody was talking about was Fae. I don't think Fae had been confirmed for the Switch before.
No, it hasn't, and I didn't know it was confirmed.
Well, it was
It
in the
was.
little in the direct, which is great.
It.
It's like EA's one game worth talking
Oh,
about
that's
this year.
the adorable game that I actually give a
Yeah,
shit
yeah,
about.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Looks
I
great.
see.
They announced a release date for it as well, which is next month.
It's yeah, it's pretty soon.
That's too soon.
Yeah.
What? Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Oh,
good.
wow.
FaZe actually, I'm really excited for FaZe because that comes from the publishing arm that did Unravel as
Yeah.
well. And
Oh,
Unravel was
cute.
a really good game.
Yeah.
So EA has some people in
Awesome.
there that seem to care about, artistic integrity, and they all seem to be in this one de
They
department.
made a game that I've been playing. It's called Star Wars Battlefront. Don't know if you know it. It's
Oh,
pretty low key.
God. Definitely
It's
watch that
a
one.
game where you put your money in and then it spits in your face and punches you in the stomach.
Performance
Sounds like fun.
It's really fun. I've been playing way too much of it.
and that is not coming to Switch, thank goodness.
It's coming
Sorry.
to my nightmares, though.
Coming to my nightmare.
Oh, and the one other game we needed to mention was Ys 8 is
Oh yeah,
coming
that's
to
coming out.
Switch. Is that how you pronounce it? Ys?
Yeah,
East.
Ys.
I always thought it was YS, to be quite
I always, yeah,
honest.
I used to pronounce it
Or
Ys.
Wise.
Yeah, I call it
But
like Ys. Like Ys.
then the nice American guy doing the voiceover told me it's Ys,
Really
so.
quick question, why did you do that tone, Ginny? I don't
I don't know. I just
Yes.
Yes. I don't know. It's just maybe it's an English second language thing. I don't know. I just called it Yes all the time.
Matt, what was your takes from the direct? Since you're the new guy here, you should have something to
Yeah.
Well, I didn't watch the direct. I just caught it. I didn't know it was happening until after it was finished because
Okay, we can
that
wrap this podcast
where they were like,
up.
"Yeah, we're not going to tell anyone about our Nintendo Direct, and we're just going to put it on at like 6 in the morning or whatever
Yeah,
time it was
it was like it was
for us."
three. It was about six for us. Yeah.
Yeah, but I caught up with things afterwards, and I'm most excited about SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy
Athena's
because,
game. Oh.
aside from Athena, there are
You mean
also a bunch of good characters in it as well.
like Kura Diamond?
There are.
Like, yes,
Yeah, Kura Diamond, Mai Shiranui.
is Geese the best girl?
I think Geese might be the best girl.
Yeah.
Geese is probably the
Yeah.
sexiest.
No,
Yeah.
Athena.
He's in Tekken now. It's pretty exciting.
Athena's not even in the game, Matt.
What are you talking about?
In my version, nobody's allowed to pick her because she's dumb.
She's banned from tournaments.
She's banned. She's banned for being not
Oh
interesting enough.
no.
You people.
For
You
being
people.
actual just garbage tier,
Yeah.
yeah. She's actually fine.
Yeah,
Me,
that's.
Matt and I have been having this massive argument over the last week about the other fighting game that's coming out soon, Under Night, whatever it's called.
In birth exe
Yeah,
dot dot
that's the
x
one.
and b dot
That's the one.
PlayStation
And
XR.
Matt refuses to acknowledge that Nanase is the best girl in that game. He just refuses, and no respect for the editor. I'm very disappointed with you,
have
Matt.
I did I refuse I She doesn't even register on my radar, really. There's too many other characters in that game.
See, this is where's the respect? Where's the
I've not
respect?
really.
I'm really glad that the
I don't
important
just like
questions
her. I
are
just
being
haven't
asked.
really noticed her because there are other characters in the game who are
So,
more interesting.
for an insight into the DDNet Slack page that we have, this is a regular conversation. And every time that I go on there to actually get things done, it's usually Matt and Matt fighting each other over something that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Hey, the battle
That
for
sounds about right.
waifus is important. Okay, I chime in from
It
time to time with my support, but those two are definitely the main banner carriers for the two different waifu teams that we have available here.
But back on topic. What was the topic? I don't even remember now.
It was Nintendo doing a thing.
Nintendo
Yeah,
doing
you said
things.
that you didn't watch that thing.
Oh yeah, that thing. See, the problem with me and the Nintendo Switch things is that I don't have a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
I don't even know how. I don't have a Nintendo
Switch. Oh, yeah. I'm forgetting that you don't have one.
I'll get one day.
But, I keep assuming you do, but I keep forgetting that you don't.
So, for me, the most exciting things were the things that were announced there, but also are coming to other consoles, like the SNK Heroines game.
That's not an exclusive to Switch?
It's coming to PS4 as well.
Oh, okay. That's cool. That's cool. I didn't know that. I actually thought it was a exclusive for some reason.
No.
I thought the Dark Souls thing was also an exclusive.
Well, I mean, it might as well be.
This is the thing. It's like that Dark Souls remaster is coming to PC, PS4, and Xbox, and absolutely nobody cares about anything but the Switch version. That shows you how effective Nintendo's been at marketing third-party stuff now. Like, people actually are now seeing the Switch version as kind of the lead version. And I know that was on the Direct and it was kind of announced that way, but that's really good effort by Nintendo as a company who has previously really struggled to
do anything right.
Well, to push third parties. They've always been good at selling their own stuff, but they've been really poor at selling third parties. And now to have people actually assuming that Dark Souls Remaster is an Switch exclusive when it's not just shows how much better Nintendo's got at that. And the SNK thing too. I thought it was an exclusive. It's not.
It's almost like they don't want to hemorrhage money anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it's tough. I mean, it's tough to really sell third party stuff when people can get it on other consoles when you're the last console into the race.
One is pretty far behind in terms of everything. It might as well have released this year.
It did come out a couple of years ahead. So I'm just saying that Nintendo
Xbox One or Xbox Zero?
Xbox One X Zero XD.
Xbox One Scorpion.
It's my favorite Mortal Kombat console.
like I was saying, the Switch is last on the market, and for Nintendo to be able to really kind of push the third party stuff on its console is impressive. So
the other little announcement that came out of that Direct that I'm excited about, again, because it's a game that is not exclusive to Switch, is Celeste, which all that was announced was the release date. Basically, it's coming out on 25th of January, and it's this very cute-looking indie platformer thing about climbing a mountain. And it looks
that's the pixel
fun.
One.
Yeah,
that looks cute. That looks
it's charming. By the Towerfall dev, which is going to be good. Yeah, Towerfall is dope.
Yeah, that would be good. I completely forgot about that one, but that's another nice little announcement.
Yeah.
That's definitely a video game.
It sure is.
So, we're about to go to some music. After the break, we'll come back and we'll talk about Dark Souls in particular. But we thought we'd intro that with some Dark Souls music. This is a pick by Alan. I don't know why I let Alan pick these musics, but I do sometimes.
I have a degree now.
In fairness to Alan, this is a really good track. It's not Sonic. It's Gwyn, Lord of Cinder. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. So for the last section of the podcast, we thought we'd start something new this year, new year and all that. Each week we're going to pick one game, one particularly memorable, standout, noteworthy, great game. And we'll talk about it in a little bit more depth, I guess, to kind of go into some of its themes, talk about, you know, what makes it a great game, all that kind of stuff. And since Dark Souls was announced, the remaster this week, we thought what a good chance it would be to make Dark Souls the focus. So yeah, we're going to talk about Dark Souls and why it's a great game. And I guess I'll kind of start off by saying I think for me, Dark Souls, I mean, everybody talks about the combat and the difficulty and all that kind of stuff with Dark Souls, but for me, what's really compelling about it is the way it tells a really great story, but without any cutscenes or dialogue and all that kind of nonsense. It's a very atmospheric and very environmental storytelling heavy game, and it has a really rich narrative once you kind of start paying attention to it and kind of get stuck into it, and that really builds a game that's very immersive for me. So yeah, for me, Dark Souls is about the narrative, and that's what I love about it. And I don't know about you guys, I think we've all played Dark Souls here, so
Yes.
Alan, I mean, what do you think is the kind of the strength of Dark Souls as a game?
Well, I think Dark Souls came out during a time that was incredibly influential, just because that the current release date of it was like the world of gaming was you walk through a very small corridor, game's not hard, you bash through it in like, you know, 6 or 7 hours and that's it. But Dark Souls provided this sort of more old school take on difficulty and actually being engaging through gameplay because of the gameplay. And I think that's really, really cool. So I think it's probably one of the most influential games of the last 10 years, simply because we now have a thing where if a game journalist says it's the Dark Souls of X, it becomes a meme, which is a good sign. I mean, I do prefer 3 over 1, but I'm not going to really go into much detail as to that because obviously we're not talking about 3. But what 1 did was so incredibly cool and so just important for the greater games industry. And also, I really like it. It's a really fun video game. It's just really enjoyable to sit down and like bash your head against a wall for a while and then have that moment of realization where you do understand how an enemy attacks and how you can just be better at the game than they are. And it also started the trend of the invasion idea in other games as well, which is one of my favorite mechanics ever, because the idea of, you know, making yourself a bit vulnerable to online players in order to get more health or, you know, get back your humanity or whatever you want to call it in each of the different games, was just very, very cool. And I like fighting people.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Dark Souls was it really pushed up against the boundary of what I'm happy to do with multiplayer. I'm not generally a big fan of online multiplayer because I find that most people don't go into games with the same spirit I do. Like they don't want to go in and they really don't want to be really immersed. They want to do stupid things online and kind of break with the kind of the environment that the developers have created. But Dark Souls really limits the way you can interact with one another. So, you know, it's harder for another player to really kind of ruin the atmosphere that the game otherwise works really hard to build. Because, yeah, if there was ways of communicating and, you know, there was that kind of stuff, I would have turned that off because, yeah.
I mean there kind of is, but it's very limited. And also you can just write try butthole or something instead. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah, there are moments where it kind of starts to break with the immersion, and that's unfortunate, but for the most part it works pretty well, I think. But yeah, again, it's about the immersion for me, and the fact that if you're playing the game you can walk from one end of the world to the other and it's all quite consistent and there's no loading times and all that kind of stuff to break with the atmosphere and the immersion is really impressive. And the way that the game's designed, the kind of the very labyrinth way that each area of the world's designed really encourages exploration, which is interesting, and it's always rewarding to kind of find these kinds of nooks and crannies. You always get something from you always get rewarded for really going out of your way to get off the beaten track and really explore, which is good level design as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, as well, we had a track just then from, I believe, Gwyn. And I'm not going to spoil it, but you don't know who that is if you haven't played the game. If you haven't played the game, you probably know who it is, but whatever. That entire series has some of the best soundtracks I've ever heard. And I just love that it brought back this bizarre sort of gothic, interesting, you know, heavy choir sort of music, because I really like it and I think it's very swell. You don't see it very often in a lot of games because it can be very hard to do in a way that doesn't sound like you've gone for generic Hollywood movie. But Dark Souls is just incredible with the variety, with the, I guess, like strength of each individual piece, to the point where you can go back to an area and generally hum its theme. Not that you'd want to, especially with Blightdown, but you can generally do it.
Yeah, it's a tonal thing. Like, if you look at another game that tried to be very like Dark Souls.
Lords of the Fallen.
Yeah, Lords of the Fallen. It doesn't really capture that same atmosphere. And a big part of that is the music doesn't really work to enhance what the environment and narrative are doing. So, yeah, look, it's very easy to get this stuff wrong. The gothic as a genre has a very distinct tone, which is actually very hard for modern artists to capture because it's quite an antiquated approach to storytelling. I mean, we're talking about Dracula and whatever from a couple of centuries ago. So, yeah, it's very difficult for a modern artist to actually do the gothic justice. And I think the guys From Software really captured it, which is even more impressive because the gothic's not native to Japan. The amount of research they would have had to have done to really capture that tone is really impressive. I mean, you'd expect the Japanese developer to turn out something a little bit more like Nioh. I guess that's more culturally attuned to them. So, yeah. I don't know, Ginny and Matt, you've both obviously played Dark Souls, or at least familiar with it. What are your thoughts on the game and its strengths and merits and all that stuff?
For me, it was kind of like what Alan was describing. So when you get your ass beat by this enemy multiple times, and then you suddenly enter the state of Nirvana, where like your fingers know what to do. On the impact. And like you just every attack that enemy's about to throw at you, like you predict and then you dodge and then you parry and then you slash and then you're just like your brain is disconnected from your hands, but your brain just like, holy shit, what is happening? And your hands are like, I got this. Like, I mean, I get the feeling in rhythm games too, like when you're like about to get like a perfect combo and like my hands disconnect from my brain and I just play the song. It's that weird adrenaline rush that I get every time that happens to my brain. Like, this is the thing. Like, I just feel like for me, it's just that it's kind of like what I wanted Monster Hunter to give me, like that feeling to have something that's like so insurmountable and so deadly to you, but in a way that doesn't frustrate you. Like, I was never frustrated by basically getting my ass handed to me, decapitated, pushed off a castle wall. Like, I never felt frustrated about it. There's something about the design of the combat and how fulfilling it is when you actually execute your moves correctly. And it's like a pattern game. I find Dark Souls for me was all about attack patterns, and I'm really good with patterns and rhythm games and stuff like that. So it was a kind of combat that gelled really well with me personally. And that's what I liked about it. It was super fulfilling and the environments were incredibly unique. Like, everyone thinks Blighttown is a nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
No, it is not a nightmare. It's just that I know that the level is intensely claustrophobic, but I felt like the fact that I felt physically uncomfortable playing Blighttown, I thought that was quite impressive.
That's because of the frame rate, not because of the game.
Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one moment of Dark Souls where the ambition wasn't quite met by the development team's ability to execute on it. But I think definitely the design of Blighttown is incredible, and I think the idea behind it was great, and it needed to be in Dark Souls. But yeah, I'm hoping that obviously the remake is able to
fix everything about that.
Address the technical elements which the developers weren't able to get. But you know, that's neither here nor there. I mean, the core idea of that part of the game was really impressive.
Mm. It was cool, and it was a nice sort of change of pace, and the variants, it's a very Metroidvania game, I'm going to say, and it had this thing of every area being incredibly recognizable and very distinct from each other.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
You go from, like, you know, castle land to essentially what is, like, magic castle land, and then you go into painting world, and then you go into, like, cool stuff like that. It did a lot of really interesting stuff that mixed it up regularly, so you weren't just fighting the same dude in armor.
They might have been distinct areas, but for me, what was most impressive about them was the transitions between those areas was very seamless.
Mm.
You know, I never think when I'm playing Dark Souls, I never think of it as a series of levels, which is... I think of it as one continuous environment that I'm exploring, and yeah, it has obviously different areas with different tones, but there's a seamlessness about it. They're not separated by some kind of barrier, which is that's probably the biggest step for me from Demon's Souls, which came before Dark Souls, to Dark Souls. Demon's Souls was definitely split into levels. And quite arbitrarily, you actually went through like a mirror thing to get to each different level. So each area felt distinct, obviously, but there was a separation, there was a break between them. Whereas with Dark Souls, there wasn't that break. You'd leave one area, there'd be a bit of land to explore, and then you'd be in the next area. But the way that they transitioned between each other was very seamless and very clean. So that was a really impressive thing about Dark Souls, and I think it really contributed to the overall atmosphere and the level design and the experience of being in the game, the immersiveness of being in the game, that it never felt like there was these arbitrary levels that it was split into.
It's just a really interesting game that made a world rather than levels, which is really nice.
It was actually kind of came from Kingsfield 4, actually, that approach to world design.
Oh my god. Okay, here we go.
The infamous Kingsfield. Yeah.
None of you have played it, but I have.
No.
Because no one wants to play it.
And it is very much like the Dark Souls in terms of the way that the world's built.
Is it the Dark Souls of Kingsfield?
No. in that every area is linked to
Dark Souls is the Kingsfield of Dark Souls.
Every area is linked to one another, and it's a very seamless transition from one to the next, and that creates a world that becomes very interesting to explore. And unlike, you know, other RPGs where everything feels distinct and split into packages, for instance, you know, you've got the snow level, you've got the forest area, you've got a town here, because you need a break between the dungeons. Dark Souls, Kingsfield fought before it, but then Dark Souls took a very different approach to JRPG level design, which is really impressive.
Matt, I'm surprised that you don't like Metroidvanias, because that's exactly what
makes the point
great.
Of Metroidvanias.
Yeah.
I don't say I don't like Metroidvanias. I don't like 2D platformers.
Oh.
Like, the thing I don't like about Metroidvanias is the platforming bit. It's not the actual way that the games are designed. Like, Super Metroid, for example, is a game I have enormous respect for, but I can't stand playing because I like the way that they've gone about the level design, but I just can't do 2D platformers. They're just not my thing.
That's fair enough. I think I've had so many thoughts come up over the course of this discussion, and I can't remember which ones I was going to talk about. The thing I like about Dark Souls as well, I'm also going to talk about the difficulty, because you have to talk about difficulty when you talk about Dark Souls. But I kind of have almost the opposite feeling to what you do, Alan, in that I really... People look at very old kind of NES games with these sort of rose-tinted glasses, like, oh, those games were so hard and they didn't want to hold your hand. A lot of those games, if you go back and play them now, they are hard just because they are badly designed.
Yeah, a lot of them are, but a lot of them, like, are relatively smart. Like, I'd argue Mega Man 2 is pretty smartly designed, but in a way that, like, you know, it's hard for a reason, because they had to make these games last.
Yeah, yeah, but they're hard in a way that is frustrating, whereas I think Dark Souls is... There's an element of that same... of that mentality, but it's more... I feel like there's a lot more thought gone into the design and the way that it is made difficult, that it's not a game that exists to beat you up and take your lunch money and make you cry. It does that, but it's more about...
It does do those things.
It does do those things, but it's as part of... They're lessons. It's a learning opportunity, and it gives you all the tools you need to deal with its bullshit, basically. And I think that kind of learning aspect of the difficulty is what makes Dark Souls really good. And I think that's kind of what Ginny was saying. Rhythm games are the same for me for that same reason.
Yeah. It's like those Dark Souls actually wants you to finish it. It doesn't want to... Yeah, it wants you to get all the way to the very end. But it
it's
wants
not Battletoads.
Feel...
It's not... No, we're not going to talk about Battletoads ever again.
It wants you to get to the very end, and it wants you to feel good about the fact that you've been able to... You know, achieve this accomplishment. It's kind of like it's an achievement in itself to finish the game. Whereas something like, Castlevania, the old Castlevania, is the one on the NES and whatever, it didn't want you to finish the game because it wanted you to keep playing for an awful lot of time. Yeah. So it had like ghost heads flying in, which you had no chance of avoiding.
The Medusas are nonsense.
Yes.
You had no chance of avoiding them. They'd hit you and you'd automatically fall down a cliff and die. The only the only way you could actually get past that is to memorize the exact pixel and timing of each jump. And that's not difficulty. That's
the fight before death, the corridor,
that's
one of the worst things.
That's cruelty. Whereas Dark Souls isn't cruel. Dark Souls is just challenging. And I think
that's an important distinction. Dark Souls isn't a difficult game. It just expects you to learn about how to play it because we've been trained over the last 20 or so years to play everything like Devil May Cry. And Dark Souls tells you, no, that's not how everything works because how does this make any sense? And to go from playing, for example, Devil May Cry or Metal Gear Rising or something like that to playing Dark Souls is a very different experience because you can't just, you know, make... a mash on the controller and then expect to win.
You can't just
unless you've broken the game.
It's a really rare kind of boss in a game like Devil May Cry that you actually
dead or alive.
Like Devil May Cry doesn't have it has a couple of memorable bosses, but it doesn't have too many. Whereas with Dark Souls, there aren't too many bosses that aren't memorable in some way or another. And that is because
whether
it's
a good thing or a bad thing, because stupid wall person sucks.
there are different reasons, but each one's kind of memorable because they're imposing, because they're challenging. And if the game wasn't challenging, the bosses wouldn't be anywhere near as memorable because, you know, you don't really have to think about them while you're playing them as you do. Well, in a lot of cases in Devil May Cry, the bosses aren't, you know, you're not really thinking that hard while you're playing them.
Spider.
Yeah, there's a couple, but not many.
The bosses are just there. The memorable part of Devil May Cry is Dante, and
it's beating up Dante on and small people.
It's Dante being cool, you know. Whereas
you're the boss, Dark Souls. You're not the boss.
You're very much a small boy who's going to get stomped.
Yes.
Well, it's the same with Bayonetta. Like, I don't remember too many of the bosses in Bayonetta. I remember Bayonetta. Whereas Dark Souls is a reverse. I don't even remember if I created a male or a female character in the first time I played Dark Souls, but I remember each of the bosses, I thought.
Like Doggo, and man who owned Doggo.
And Gwyn.
And Gwyn. Gwyn. And Centipede.
I remember all the bosses from Demon Souls, and it's been a very long time since I last played Demon Souls. And
do you remember all the bosses from Kingsfield 4?
Yeah.
Yes,
tell us more.
you didn't say that, but yeah, I mean, Kingsfield 4 is much the same thing, and the Souls games are an extension of.
Sorry.
Really, is that what it's
for all the listeners? For the listeners, the Kingsfield games were actually the entry into the Dark Souls. It was the same development team. It was,
but they're
Demon
bad.
Souls. Demon Souls was designed as a spiritual sequel to Kingsfield. The developer just decided that rather than do another first-person game, because the Kingsfield games play out like that, like Oblivion or Morrowind or whatever, they play out in first-person. The switch to third-person meant that the development team didn't want to call it another Kingsfield game, so they came up with a new name. And
that
Souls
name
series
Bloodborne.
Was born. Yeah. So that's why when I talk about Kingsfield as part of the Souls series, they kind of really are. They're just earlier prototypes, I guess you want to call them. And
bad.
Says the guy who hasn't played them. They're really good games.
Really I've good seen games. The screen, not the screenshot, the video of you walking forward two steps and then dying in a pit. And that's terrible.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
That's the opening two steps of the game too.
Yeah.
What? Why? Yeah.
Because
in Kingsfield 4, the difficulty is really brutal. But yeah, one of the ways the game teaches you to really pay attention to what's going on around you from the very outset is if you don't take the first couple of steps in the right direction at the start of the game, the ground collapses underneath you and you instant die, which is good. It was good, actually, because...
It's really good.
It happened the first time, and it never happened to me again, obviously. And after it happened to me, I started really paying attention to everything around me and taking my time. And that was a clever way of the developers making sure that I didn't play it like a first-person shooter or whatever. So, yeah, I was quite... I thought that was a really clever touch. So, teach through
play
and all that.
Fun video game.
Teach through play and all that. It's exactly what Dark Souls does.
Mm-hmm.
Well...
I feel like this is not going to end well for anyone.
There are so many times in Dark Souls where you'll see a cliff edge and you'll think about whether you want to jump over the edge of it or not.
And then you see the ghosts of everyone jumping off the cliff.
Or you don't, and then you take a risk and you land on your thing and get some good treasure and stuff. You know, it's...
I just love the cliff at the beginning of Dark Souls 2, I think. When you enter into the town, if you're, the town's called, and there's just the tiny little cliff, like, sort of below you into the left. And I walked out because I was playing the game at launch, and I just saw so many people just going, well, just jump off, and missing it completely. And it was one of my favorite things to do. Just watch people completely screw up this one jump. And there was one dude who did it at least 4 times. It was great. Good game. It's a fun video game.
And on that note, we might wrap for the week. I hope you enjoyed that new section.
Are you going to wrap for us, Matt?
Yep, I am.
Dear, please do not.
We'll think of a different game to talk about next week, and hopefully it'll be an interesting one as well.
Sonic Adventure 2.
Yes.
Kingsfield 4. We've talked about Kingsfield 4 enough today.
It'll be a game that actually has some purpose in existing, so it won't be
Sonic Adventure 1.
But not Kingsfield 2.
It won't be a Sonic game, that's for sure.
Wow.
It'll be Sonic Riders.
Sonic Forces?
Maybe it'll
Sonic
be Prince 2006.
Of
Persia. No. Maybe it'll be Prince of Persia.
Sonic.
Yeah, Prince of Persia.
Sonic of Persia.
I was listening to this soundtrack a lot this week, so
Prince of Persia, Sands of Sonic.
Sonic of Time.
You're not going to finish your sentence, Matt.
Yeah, I know. They're going to keep cutting in. I've been listening to this soundtrack a lot over the last couple of weeks. I don't know why I've been addicted to it all over again. It's really good, and I wish I could play the game again. Maybe a HD remaster of Prince of Persia, Sands of Time would be a good thing. If Ubisoft could stop creating goddamn Assassin's Creed games. Anyway, this one is The Library. It's a really good track, and... enjoy, and we will see you all next week.